Okay, good afternoon, everyone. How's everyone doing? Getting that point in the afternoon, everyone's feeling a little sleepy. Get your coffees. Well, it's great to have an opportunity to chat with you. I'm Dylan Diaz. I'm a managing consultant at Neil Analytics. And with me is David Brown. David helps me with solution sales. So we want to spend some time today to give you a little more context on, you know, what it takes to win in the trenches, you know, win with customers, and to enable our customers as well as our solution practices to be more successful in the space of advanced analytics. So what I want to cover with you, I have a few sections, but we'll talk about, you know, what it means to be successful, how you're going to be able to, you know, define a good agenda when you go and engage with customers, and what are some of the scorecards and metrics that are critical to make sure that we're all winning. A little background about the company before I dive in. We are an SI based out of Seattle. The focus is on kind of the entire fabric that is required to make advanced analytics and traditional BI come to life for our customers. So I'll go a little bit into that. So anyway, before I go too far, I want to do a little snap quiz here. I want you to raise your hand if I'm going to try to divide this room and get a sense of buy side and sell side. So how many of you are customers and how many of you are on the supplier partner side? So customers, can you raise your hand? Okay, we have about 7, 8, great. And the rest I'm assuming are on the supply side. How many of you are partners, not Microsoft? Okay, awesome. Now I'm going to ask the people who just put their hands up to keep it up. And if you have been in a situation where you've had, for whatever reason, right, a dissatisfied customer or some, you know, a situation where people were not comfortable with where you kind of reached in your final outcome, put your hands up. Okay. Brave soul there. Everyone else I'm going to hire, right, because I need you guys to be on my team. This is hard, right? I mean, I'm sure if I go to the few customers that are out here, you know, they'll put their hands up and say, hey, you know, we've always wanted more, and you know, it's a tricky game, right? We're trying to accomplish a lot. There's a lot of tools. You got to meet your customer where they are in their maturity. You got to leverage the assets that are being provided by the platform provider, that's Microsoft, and then you need to bring your own personal skill sets to bear in an effective way to make it all come together. And this can be a tricky, you know, a tricky value proposition. So what I'm trying to try to enlighten up here today is some of the techniques that we bring to bear, some of the learnings we have had, and hopefully leave you with a scorecard that you can walk away with and begin to, you know, use in your practices. So as I said, when we, you know, when we talk about advanced analytics and traditional BI, we try to look at this more as a fabric, right? It's not about trying to do kind of a big data lake or do Hadoop or, you know, an EDW. It's all of the above, and in some ways, you know, none of the above, right? It sinks to a secondary level where the focus needs to be on business value and kind of business applicability. So we do all of the above, but we try our best in customer situations to talk as little about this and to focus more on the business value. You know, some of the things that that we find very exciting right now in where we're at is the entire push towards trying to make sense of your data in a mature fashion. You know, it's one thing to be able to do advanced analytics or modeling in a one-off ad hoc basis. It's another thing to do this at scale. I'm sure many of you have heard of the word DevOps, right? So think about DevOps and how do you bring DevOps to bear in a modeling scenario. So call it modeling ops, call it, you know, model management, and those are some of the things that we like to see and bring to bear so that we make this all pop. Here's a snapshot of how we like to talk about our relationship with Microsoft and how we go to market. So, you know, Microsoft obviously is the provider of the big data platform. We provide both solutions and services that work well along with the Microsoft value proposition to make customer scenarios real and effective. Microsoft produces a lot of the assets. I'm sure, you know, you've been wowed by a lot of the technical goodness that has been coming out from Microsoft, and it's fabulous, right? A little side note here, we got involved with Azure Machine Learning, or I should say Cortana Analytics now, way back in 2013. It wasn't called any of these. It was called Project Passau. Not sure how many of you have heard of that. But, you know, we've seen, personally, I've seen, and our team has seen the evolution of Microsoft's portfolio, so to speak, over the last 2 years, and it has been nothing short of breathtaking and fascinating. And so, you know, it's wonderful to have see all of you in the room and in this conference these 2 days, and I think that's testimony to some of the great work that Microsoft is doing, both from a technical sense as well as out there educating the customers on why this is a better platform than SaaS and SPSS and SAP and all of the others. So it's great. So Microsoft provides that machine learning goodness, and then we come, you know, close behind, and we're saying, okay, you know, we're bringing this to life in the context of you know, big data or data engineering to make this all come together. And finally, visualization. You know, the visualization is one of the most important hooks. We are increasingly seeing that you come to market and you become more effective if you have that sexy endpoint. And I'm sure all of you are plugged in into the entire Power BI movement and app.power BI and now Power BI Desktop. Another great set of advancements from Microsoft. Once again, you know, great market momentum. And these now are beginning to provide kind of the sexy endpoints that we can drive towards delivering solutions that make all of this come together and pull through really beautifully. So, you know, in summary, it's a great synergistic relationship. We are primarily an SI with some solutions, and we find this works really well. We're able to land this message in a very effective way in the market. Okay, so let's dive into the meat of the session. What I wanted, the first piece is around kind of meeting the customer. You know, I'm sure, you know, many of you are out there trying to sell services, and you know, every customer thinks they're different, right? And in some ways that's true, in some ways it's not. So how do you develop a framework, kind of a heuristic, that helps you to understand what stage of the journey the customer is so that you can customize or, you know, land the message in an effective way? So we'll talk a little bit about that. The engagement model. How do you line up the right set of assets, capabilities, people, IP, so that you can, you know, understand the customer's challenges and, you know, effectively bring that into motion. Solving the problem. Once more, a little bit around how we go to market and what we try to do to solve some of the issues that we identify. And finally, you know, the roadmap, right? We all want to identify some place to get hooked in, to solve a problem, and then grow the practice, you know, grow the engagement, and then of course grow the value for the customer, right? It has to be synergistic and value for both. And you know, we have a few demos, so I'm going to try to display one demo, which is a true case that we delivered and we had a competitive win. I'll tell you more about, and hopefully that lights it up. And time permitting, David will help us walk through a few more. So the maturity curve. I'm sure you know most people have seen some version of this. This is important. We do understand. You know, we intercept our customers in a variety of places. There are some folks I've had the, you know, the opportunity and sometimes the misfortune, right, to intersect people where they're really mature, immature and naive in, you know, in where they are in their practice. And so, you know, In many cases, you've got to begin from basics, right? If someone doesn't have a good foundation, you're going to struggle with being able to land advanced analytics concepts. You might not be able to tell the customer that, hey, you know, you don't want to do that ML or the, you know, predictive analytics sprint, but you want to be able to level set their expectations so that they don't get, you know, one step too far ahead of the other and trip, and we don't trip with them. So, you know, we have this mental frame as we're out there selling, trying to deliver as consultants, and we try to say, you know, where in this maturity curve do we find the customer? There's standard reports, you know, the traditional BI, which is probably more commonplace, all the way, you know, up to the statistical methodologies, predictive modeling, and optimization. And, you know, machine learning, I'm sure, is on top of this, you know, this value chain or value stack, so to speak, where you want to have people, you know, make advanced decisions based on an optimized set of data and information that's being presented. So we like to kind of, you know, help customers understand where they stand and stack, and then move them through a journey on this maturity curve. So what are the different kinds of customer types, right? And this is a list that's representative based on our experiences. There's probably more than this, but you know, the first type is, you know, people are like, hey, we have a lot of data, right? They come to you, they have a recognition that there's a lot of data, and you know, we're drowning, we've tried a few things. So from a customer success perspective, what I like to, you know, ask in this situation is try to get a good sense of what they've tried before, what has been previously attempted. Oftentimes, you know, you might go through through an entire project and you might come away with, you know, people haven't completely, you know, disclosed their past successes or failures. Maybe there are some metrics, some data sets that have not been brought to the core. So it's really important when you have a kind of, you know, I have a lot of data type of customer to really get in and try to understand, you know, where they're coming from, what they're trying to achieve, you know, what have been unfulfilled promises. Have the uncomfortable conversation. Sometimes it's not easy, but I found that if you create an atmosphere of you know, of comfort and trust, you can get in and try to get really to the guts of this and uncover all of the cobwebs in the closet so we can have a you know, a positive set of next steps. There's another customer type that's very interesting. They want to build with you. I think we're in blue, the customer's in white, I'm not sure. But you know, they want to build with you. And beware this kind of customer. You want to make sure that you include them because it's important to include them. But you know, there has to be a good definition of what needs to be done by the customer, what needs to be done by our team. I mean, I was working with a large e-commerce company, and the opportunity was around retail personalization. Right? Retail personalization in brief is how do I use kind of increasingly, you know, local and micro-segmented forms of data so I can understand you as an end customer and be able to target to you better. Now, the situation was that, hey, you know, let's try to build this together. But very soon after moving through the process, you know, we had to disengage because we realized that for a large multi-billion dollar e-commerce company, retail, you know, just the aspect of retail personalization is very core to them. It's almost their core competence. It's almost their differentiator. And so you're not going to be able to, you know, it'll be trying to, you know, pull something out of, you know, the cold dead hands of someone. They're not going to give it away because it's so core to them. On the other hand, if you talk to I had another situation where we got successful in retail personalization. It was a brick and mortar kind of, you know, premium cooking and company, a retailer, let's put it at that. These folks had their expertise in brick and mortar, and they did not want to build together. They were very comfortable with saying, you know what, we are good at brick and mortar. You guys are good at the machine learning and the retail personalization piece. Why don't you do it? So be aware of, you know, what's to be built, insourced, outsourced, what's core competence, and what are long-term aspirations for this customer? Do they want to own the modeling in-house, or do they want to be partnering with someone to drive this for them? The other interesting type is the solution pronto type, right? I sometimes go into some, you know, tricky sales cycles and they give you a bunch of data and you show up the next time around and they're like, so have you created my demand curve for me? And I'm like, wait, you know, we haven't yet begun, right? And so there's a whole group of customers and there's a pivot around this that Microsoft's trying to drive. We are trying to drive as well, which I think is really important. There's a segment of the market that wants solutions out of the gate, period. I like to think of this, if you're familiar with Microsoft's segmentation schema, they have major, CAMI, CAMS, CTM. I have found that there's a rough correlation of, you know, what you sell to these different segments based on their size and their internal capabilities. So what that means is, as you come down the segmentation stack, you're less likely to sell advanced analytics. You're less likely to sell machine learning in the form that you describe it. No one's going to, you know, really, as you come down the stack, really they're going to say, hey, you know, I want to buy, you know, 5,000 hours of machine learning, right? I've never heard that. You will find that in the bigger companies because they do have the sophistication and expertise. With the smaller companies, it's about, can you help me improve my campaigns? Can you help me promote better? Can you help me manage yield? Can you help me improve revenue, right? So these are very pointed endpoint solution scenarios that you need to be prepared for. So, you know, I call them the solution pronto guys. You know, they want pre-packaged. Do you have ready insights? You know, a lot of great, I think the session before this was about, you know, talking about marketplace. You know, so we have begun to land some solutions in there. And I think that's a great avenue as well to serve this group. I have a long list. I won't go through this in detail, but I want to touch upon each of these groups briefly. So the financial services is traditionally been a bastion of a lot of advanced analytics and actuarial science, et cetera. So that's a good space. Our general theme is when we go to these, we want to find somewhat net new territories or scenarios. We like to begin with scenarios. So it's all about trying to emphasize what the business value is right up front before you pull out anything, the ML Studio or anything, because that's not going to land you in a good spot. You begin with a scenario, you talk to the business stakeholders, and you want to land good solutions. So I want to go through this list, but I won't go through the details on this. I'll give you one example of how we described a business scenario for a customer in each group, and maybe that gives you some insights into driving to that customer success. So for an insurance company in the financial services space, we were asked to work on helping the actuarial department use ML to improve the speed and efficiency of their actuarial science. Traditionally, you have a lot of statistical techniques. So how can you marry statistical, more open box or translucent box techniques with ML? So that was that scenario. With retail, I briefly touched upon it. It's about retail personalization. How do you take increasingly specific sets of information? There's data out there, for example. Obviously, we all know about social. There's additional services that help you to identify very specifically. This is a Big Brother stuff. Sadly, it's happening, but it's happening. But there are services out there that can help you identify. It's like the Dun & Bradstreet for end customers. And so, how do you take this information, marry it up with, what you know from your internal transaction logs about a customer, loyalty programs, and be very specific in your targeting? Previously, this would be the assets of a large e-commerce site like an eBay, but very quickly, it's becoming pretty, mainstream and available to lots of people. For telcos, churn is a very popular topic in telcos. We've had mixed feelings on churn, a scenario like churn. Once again, remember back again to the customer success thing. You want to sell into relatively net new scenarios. So if you think of churn, telcos have, my example of personalization for an e-commerce site, telcos have churn very central to how their business, right? Every telco subscription service needs to have a position on churn. So you got to have something really different to be able to bring to the table so that you can stand out. So in the telco example, it's a combination of using text analytics, call center data logs, analyzing that, and putting this all together into an effective churn offering. Manufacturing has had some very interesting cases. We're working with a glass manufacturing company. Statistical process control, probably familiar to a lot of you. But the question is around yield management. How in process and in batch manufacturing, you have a lot of switching between specifications. And how do I reduce the amount of time it takes to switch between specifications so the time save is reducing the wastage and increasing the throughput and the output. So that's yield. In the case of the glass manufacturer, it's a fun example. I like that personally. I'm an engineer, so it warms my heart. But you have molten glass flowing through. You have burners that heat up the feeders that actually keep the glass at a certain temperature. And depending on the specification of what glass is being created, is it windshield glass, is it glass for soda bottles, you're going to have different temperatures of the burners. And so the problem they brought to us, it's a multi-million dollar problem, by the way, is how can I have the burner set points adjusted in a quicker window so I can shrink the non-yielding time, right? And remember, it's not that you could have the same setup, the same set of burners, the same specification, but if ambient temperature has changed, if it's more humid or it's less humid, at a very micro level, it affects how the flow dynamics and cooling dynamics are, which will change that specification and throw it out of spec. So, but now with things like Azure Machine Learning, you have I'll just say a weather service. I don't know where we are with the release. You have a weather service come in that pumps in, at a micro level, weather information for that particular geography in that zip code in a certain, country. You have, for my other examples, you have social, right? So there's a lot of good information that's flowing in. And that's where the value of, the Cortana Analytics kicks in, because suddenly you can buy in a pay-per-use scenario, you can buy small snippets of data and combine this in a very effective fashion that creates millions of dollars of value. For example, this glass manufacturing company that could shrink their non-yield time, right? Healthcare. A fun example with healthcare, this is with working with a pharma company on trying to improve their couponing strategy. So, in a traditional sense, I just, I have a coupon strategy. I know some hot markets, some mid-level markets, some slow markets, and I might have a coupon strategy. But, now that I know enough about, in this case, it was couponing around allergy medication. So I know about temperature. Once again, this is this internal, external variable kind of interplay that I'm kind of honing in on. I know what the temperature is. I know that there's a negative correlation between rain and allergens in the air, and that has a direct correlation then to the amount of allergy medication I can sell. So if I can put this all together, and if I'm a merchandising manager for a pharma company, and I am able to bring this all together in an effective dashboard that can help me be very specific, not blanket on what my couponing strategy is, but specific by location, and then shrink the windows for which I run these coupons, suddenly I'm a lot more effective. I'm responsive to in-market, here-and-now conditions that may makes it a lot of fun. Once again, possible through ML. Utilities, oil and gas. Yeah, this is another fun one. Working with a set of tier three oil and gas manufacturing companies. Very quickly, tier three, when a major hits oil, the oil just gushes out of the ground. They don't have to do much. I'm simplifying grossly, but that's what happens. The issue is that when flow rate drops to a certain level, they sell this asset to a second-tier operator, like an Apache or Marathon. When the flow drops even further, they sell it to tier three operators, which have to pump in salt water into the ground to push out the remaining oil from the wells. There's a lot of, there's different economics, of course, at all of these different levels. But, the tier three and the tier twos have to do more work, and they're obviously smaller companies from $10 to $300 million typically in the tier twos and threes. Actually, that would be tier threes. The question is, how can you enable these tier threes to reduce the, oil is at a historic low, right? So if the cost of lifting a barrel is like it's between $18 to $30, that's a fact. If I can reduce the cost of lifting that oil by $2 to $3, hey, that's a good thing. So how is it relevant to us? Well, it's an IoT solution, it's an ML solution. We have partnered with a company that is got a lot of patents on variable speed drives. You guys are probably familiar with pump jacks, the pictures down from Texas, these things with heads that are moving up and down. Well, those run on electricity. And you can plug into the real-time electricity grid, and if the spot market rate of electricity is too high, you can do the math and you can say, hey, why am I running that pump jack when this thing is expensive, when the marginal cost of electricity is creating my lifting cost that's taking me above what I'm going to be able to sell the oil for? So slow it down. Slow the pump jack down. And you cannot stop it, because sometimes when you stop it, you never get oil back again. So you slow it down to the slowest possible speed, and there you go. You've improved your lifting cost economics. There's other things around spills. So these are mostly unmanned sites. So how you don't want to man them because the economics don't suffice. But how do you ensure that the tank doesn't overflow, causes you an expensive spill? EPA comes knocking at your door, and there you go. You lose more money, right? There are sensors in these tanks, and you can measure that, and we use Power BI to kind of light this up. Another piece around truck optimization. You have these drivers driving around that are picking up oil from these tier three providers. How do you optimize the routing schedule so that we can go when the tanks are quite full? The second piece was fun for me. I've learned a lot through my practice directors doing this. This was really fun. Apparently, there's an honest system for how these pretty relatively impoverished tier three providers get paid. There's a mason jar. They write down, you know, the truck driver that pulls up writes down a log of, you know, when they showed up, how much they pulled out of those tanks, and puts it back in the mason jar. Guess what? You know, I wish the honest system worked better, but it doesn't. So, you know, these guys are losing up to 20 to 30% of their revenues because of that honest system. Well, now they don't, right? Because using, this is kind of the fraud analytics piece that kicks in through ML, using, you know, knowledge of the flow, knowledge of draws, knowledge of comps, right? Because if you're doing, we're doing this across, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 customers, you know comparables, and you can create benchmarks, and you can drive, you know, efficiencies around lifting. So anyway, net-net on this, this is a, one of my fun scenarios. How can we reduce lifting costs by $2 to $5 a barrel that will make those tier three providers more effective? Public sector. Dropout prediction. David's been driving some of this with the public sector group here at Microsoft. But you know, how do you use information about students, interventions? There's different kinds of interventions, right? When a student is not doing well, you could do a lot of different things. You know, night school and you know.
Little Johnny can't read good.
Yeah. So anyway, so there's different interventions. Previously, the as a state was, you know, you have a uniform set of interventions that go in and try to help all of these students? Well, no, you can be a little more directed and targeted with better information, better knowledge about how an intervention, you know, helps a certain personality, be more directed, be more focused, and you know, this helps with dropout and reduces dropouts, which are, by the way, quite expensive. And finally, consumer goods. This is the demo that I'll show you. This is a project we did with a $5 billion Coca-Cola bottler. It's actually public now, so I can say the name, Arca Continental, in Mexico. The problem out there was, how do I manage assortment, you know, SKU selection, all of the typical problems, canonical scenarios you'd find in CPG. How do I manage that better to you know, drive revenue and bottom line impact? Okay, I said a lot there, but you know, hopefully you got the sense of there's a lot of fun scenarios. These are things that Neil Analytics is doing today, spanning these industries. And as you see me going through one of all of these, you know, I did mention ML and predictive a few times, but mostly the focus is on you know, the customer value proposition and lighting up these scenarios in a way that someone looks at it and in 2 seconds they get it right. So back again to the theme of the session. I feel that's a big driver of customer success. How can you get super excited about the business scenario and not so much, you know, get excited about the ML piece. I have a great team that does, but, you know when to say what. I'm going to probably, how are we doing on time? Yeah. Okay, so I'm probably going to speed up here a little bit. So challenges and opportunities, I think you guys know this. So lots of data, you know, lots of opportunities to use ML and predictive analytics to understand behaviors, to get more better targeted segmentation, to make micro adjustments. That's what the value is, micro adjustments. Typically a scenario, it's not that they have not done anything ever before, the customer. They're not stupid. But it's a question of meeting them where they're at, empathizing with what they're struggling with, and then trying to advance the envelope. So I did want to, you know, I did want to be pretty candid here. So what are typical sources of DSAT, right? What is dissatisfaction stemming from in such accounts? You know, with all of these, typically we tend to, you know, as a consulting shop, and you know, with budgets the way they are and stuff, you know, we tend to move, you know, quickly, and so sometimes the risk is, you know, too much too quick, and this can come from both sides, right? It comes from the consultant, you know, trying. Potentially over-promising because they want to win the deal. It also comes from the customer having a wrong notion of, you know, how much can be done and, you know, what the complexity is. So be careful about that. Funding levels, you know, there's always these dynamics around POCs versus pilots versus production, and you want to make sure that you fund that correctly. Misaligned semantics. Sorry, David. I do want to talk about misaligned semantics. It's very, very important. I had a situation where a customer talked about forecasting, the simple word, forecasting. Everyone knows what forecasting is. Well, be careful. Forecasting for the guys in marketing is different from the forecasting for the campaign managers, different from forecasting in the production shop. I can go on, right? The same word forecasting was instantiated six to 10 different ways in the company. And if you have not done the homework, you can solve a forecasting problem for group A, but if group C is also at the table as a stakeholder, you're going to be shot down, right? So be careful about semantics. Don't assume anything. The simplest words that seem the most obvious are typically the most tricky. Team and capabilities. That word out there is a word, I think it's a Neil Analytics word. It's my data science director uses the word schmexperts. Is that right?
Yep.
Schmexperts, yeah. it's a combination between schmuck and expert. And the thinking out here is you have people sometimes who are in important positions that have, you know, and, you know, by all means, right, you know, God bless these folks. So this is how we all began. But you've done a course on Coursera. You've done, you know, you've probably, you know, read a few news articles or whatever. But now, you know, someone thinks they're a data scientist or an expert. This can be dangerous because if they're in a position of importance, they're directing the project, but they're not necessarily well-versed. Half knowledge, half truth is the most dangerous. You know, you're going to be in trouble. So be careful about that. Capabilities, make sure we have the right mix of capabilities. I have a slide that will give you some pointers around that. And then coordination across work streams. Especially, you know, think back to the two business types I talked about. If you're in the SI business, if it's more of bespoke projects, this is even more important. Typically, you're orchestrating a lot of data streams to make things come together. If you're in the solutions business, it's probably a little more rational and calm, but it still requires a lot of multifaceted coordination. So make sure you keep it tight. Transition, very important. You know, sometimes we work with partners, we work with Microsoft, we work with different groups, IT versus business. Do not underestimate, in my opinion, right, I'm pontifying here, but we are very careful about underestimating the transition. Just because we built a model, just because we did a POC, the throw it over and someone's going to catch it and it's going to land hasn't worked. It doesn't work for us, at least. So we are very thoughtful about, you know, what is the design, right? If it is, you know, I'm building a tool for improving yield, well, what is the landing? How do you stick the landing? How do you think through oftentimes this is a business transformation. You can build an analytical asset, but then you also need to transfer it and land it in a way that people actually use it and get comfortable with it and continue to drive it in the company. So there is an entire kind of, you know, school of thought around organizational change, which is important and relevant to this business. You wouldn't think that goes alongside hardcore kind of, you know, support vector machines and random forests, but it is very, very important. And finally, I talked about that. So don't stop at the model and think about the entire business landing. Just one tidbit out here, you know, probably some folks have heard about interpretability versus expressiveness. Traditional kind of statistical, you know, parametric exploration techniques, OLS, multivariate regression, these tend to be a little more translucent or open box. So why is that important for customers? There's a whole class of customers that if you, you know, simply string a model together and say, okay, here's a prediction, they'll look at you and they'll say, why? Where do you get that from? They're just non-believers. So you want to, until you get a sense of where you are in that account, you know, who likes what, you want to balance your translucent box, you know, using techniques that are not black box to drive confidence in what you're doing. Now, if you look at, you know, literature, typically those are less accurate. They're less expressive. On the other hand, black box models are more expressive. You're going to get better recall accuracy, but they're going to be harder to interpret, right? It's very hard to describe a neural net. So that's one aspect that we try to balance as we go through our practice. I'll quickly go through this. So, you know, I like to think of this, you know, baseball field. You know, go make it real. Go all the way. You know, people will come to you with infrastructure, big data, models, predictive analytics, cloud. You know, I can add probably 15 more things there. But, you know, from there, you got to move, right? It's about canonical business scenarios that work. It's about closed form hypothesis definition and a good understanding of success. From there, it's advanced, rigorous advanced analytical processes. There was a talk earlier today. If you haven't seen it, go look it up. Microsoft has a methodology for how you do data science. I think that's great. We've begun to use that. It helps us speed through the process. Work with the customer where you have the opportunity and go for quick wins. And finally, close the loop. Design for in-market testing, right? Think about, I'm going to create this yield whatever or this churn predictor. How am I going to design for putting this in market and get a good sense of close feedback quickly so that I can improve it? And of course, then have an analytical roadmap. If you win them with the first few things, then you want to know about the 15 things you're going to do to make their life even better. So. I think we can, how are we doing on time? 36. So we'll probably move through this quickly. I'm sure everyone has some version of this, but, identify scenarios, prioritize, put into production. All of you have by now heard about one of the key value propositions of Cortana Analytics is about operationalization. I stuck that. Going from an idea to a working asset, and we have a few of them to show you, is important, and Cortana Analytics does a great job of doing that. We like to think of the thing on the right, we think it's three parts that as we go deeper into our practice, how do we pull this all together? We think there are three parts. Is data engineering, data science, and business management. For me, no part of this is more important than the other, because without all three of them, the stool would fall down. Next slide. I just put some little additional detail out here. On the data engineering side, you guys are probably familiar with the entire pipeline. You've heard that the data can be the most tricky part. It's true. There are some ways in which kind of data is beginning to improve, but it's still the most tricky part. So have a good data acquisition strategy. Have a good strategy around how you're going to keep it fresh. Remember my comment around doing it once is very different from doing it at scale and in a repeatable fashion. So you got to think of those design aspects. The data science, data scientists are scarce. You guys have heard that. I think the new meta point I'd like to bring around that is kind of a yin-yang we describe between our data science group and our business management group. Our business management group is typically management consultants. These are folks that have been out there purely responsible for solving business problems. They kind of have a sort of sense of, what the statistical or ML techniques are, but they're not deep. That's the domain of the data scientists. But there's a good yin-yang and a tension, a healthy tension that goes between these two so that any one side doesn't get to ahead and cause us to trip. So that's like how we like to do it. And finally, scenario development. I personally like this a lot. It's a very simple tool, but it's helpful. I can't describe how many times we're all in the room talking about the talking about the same thing. But until you put it down in a very kind of specific format that lands, people don't get it. So we use a set of tools out there. Some of these are very simple questionnaires that kind of help make that's kind of customers out there writing stuff down. We synthesize it, we put it into some model specifications, and then kind of enter into execution after we have planned properly for it. So that's important. Okay, my last slide, I think.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. So pulling this all together, I created this yesterday. What is a satisfaction scorecard? So as I looked across, all of the things I've developed, I find that the most satisfied customers happen when we've kind of, check the box somewhat on all of these. So knowledge transfer, customers like to know, and we are fine doing it because there's so much opportunity out there. They like to know that you're leaving them equipped to be knowledgeable about their own processes, be knowledgeable about the science, about the art, both the art and the science of doing this. So we focus a lot on being very open with, hey, we're here to teach you if you want to learn, right? Just bring the right resources. Obviously, on time, on budget, be careful about some of the red herrings or the landmines that could be hidden that I described in the earlier part of my conversation. The right phasing or stages, crawl, walk, run, is important, and making sure that the customer appreciates the difficulties sometimes that are involved is important, because in hindsight, it gets a little tricky. Working through those business scenarios, so the eight verticals I talked about, be deliberate about trying to describe it and get excited about the business outcome. Align the semantics. Remember the thing I told you about forecasting? It's important to make sure that the data dictionary is aligned, the semantics are on the same page. Operationalize quickly. Cortana Analytics helps in a great way to do that. Value, we're all asked to do that all the time, so I don't need not say more. Remember, there's quite a lot of variety out here, so you can be creative in the way in which you define value, both upfront when you start the project. What is the definition? How is it lift? Is it additional revenue? Define it upfront and then close a loop at the end. And finally, a roadmap or a program that helps solidify our interests as well as the customer's interests, as well as Microsoft's interests as we try to grow and win together. So I think that's about it. Any questions?
Do we have any questions before we move on to the demo?
Okay, I did well.
Excellent. Well done.
So this is an example of this Coca-Cola bottler that I talked about. The problem they brought to us was around how do I, they actually manifested in a few different ways, one of which was the forecasting problem, but we actually debunked that. We moved away from forecasting. So then it moved to SKU selection, assortment, sales decomposition. I'm not sure how many of you have ever had this, but we often have customers that ask us why. Why do we sell? Why does sales drop? Why have year and year changes happened? And, because if you know more about why you did well at something or didn't do well at something, then you can, make adjustments, right? So we always have this why problem. What you have out here is just a manifestation of, the different data sources. And also, in some ways, it points to the variety and the explosion of data that's happening today and that you can bring together to kind of drive the sales modeling that we did for them. You want to pull up the real experiment? Do you have that open?
Yep. But I get easily confused by mice. So let me do duplicate. All right, hopefully this will pop up. There we go. This one. So here's the experiment.
I'm not going to go into detail, but the couple of highlights out here, we extracted about 800 million records. So we took 3.5 years worth of SAP transaction data. We used SAP BW services. So great story. SAP, there's a lot of kind of, SAP is a co-opetition, so to speak, for Microsoft, but lots of great traction with SAP. So when you go out there, you meet a lot of your customers that have their ERPs on SAP, and it's a good story. So we've done that. This was also a funny situation because at Arca, we were in a competitive bake-off with some of the most, credible names in advanced analytics. We had SAS. We had SAP peddling its own advanced analytics platform. We had HP Vertica, and we had a couple of local competitors. This was down in Mexico. And so all of these, we went heads up, and it was a total merit-based decision. The eval process took 3 months. We had to do some ML just to get in the door, which was, it was a decision we made because of the brand name. But we won. We won against Microsoft and Neil came together. Great support from Joseph Sirosh and his organization. Lots of smart data scientists in there. We came together and we won at Arca. So then, this is one of the initial models, but we've been able to take 800 billion records, a lot of fun stuff, predominantly OLS. We've done a little bit of ML, but predominantly OLS, but lots of custom R modules. It's a very configurable end product that can help them, address their drivers of demand.
So you already talked about the data flow?
Very briefly, I don't think we talked about this, but you know, you've probably seen some version of this. There's SAP out there, there's data collection. We use a combination of blob storage. I don't think it's out here, but we've also used HD Insight. We've used Azure, SQL on Azure, on an Azure VM, as well as SQL Azure. Some meta points around this installation. You gotta be careful around firewalls. We ran into an issue around just being able to open some ports that that held us back and actually created a 1 month delay in the project. And this was not Microsoft's doing. This was a customer that was pretty anal with how they wanted to expose their ports on their firewall. So, you know, some tricky things come along the way. But we did it. You know, a lot of R. Our entire shop does a lot of R. So R and some standard AML modules. You saw the experiment visualized through Power BI and Excel. And I think we have a few of those endpoints.
Yep.
Do you want to show the Power BI first?
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Yeah, so you know, this is from a little while back, so a little legacy, but you know, it basically allows us, it shows some of the value of Power BI. You know, we have visualizations through maps. You know, so one of the findings were after we went through the modeling process is you know, understanding the amount of variation. We know that when it's hot, you know, soda sells, right? That's not not that remarkable. But what was more remarkable was being able to put a number to it. There's another slide that I don't think I have here, but we were able to quantify to this customer for every degree centigrade that the temperature rose, they were able to sell 152,000 unit boxes sold, right? And if I had to put my finger on the few, one of the key things that won the deal for us, it was the ability. You know, SAP paraded a bunch of data scientists. So did SAS and the customer told us. But what they appreciated was the simplicity. We didn't say anything about models. There was no mention of machine learning, but just about quantifying the results in very, you know, line of business manager accessible facts. And so we had an entire map that showed the correlation between each driver of sales and how much it affected unit boxes sold. And they got it and they liked us for that. So this is just kind of, you know, there's a few clicks here, but lighting up all of the volume information, explaining correlations. We did some backward and forward predictive modeling around, you know, lift and fit to that lift. So that's in there. And let's quickly jump to the tool. So this is the tool. This is the demo tool, though. It's not the final one. But what it shows you out here is the operationalization, right? We've been able to instantiate the model features. We said that 1 degree helps you sell X unit cases more of soda. Great. How do I now make this easy for an end line of business manager, a merchandising guy, whatever, a promotions guy, to make his job real, right? How do I use it on a day-to-day basis? So this is just a shell representation, but it does that, right? If David changes the temperature, you know, it's going to be you know, hotter in week 23. It's hitting the ML service and coming back. So, you know, we're going to be expecting to see a lift because of that increase in temperature. It happened just now, right? You saw the second bar. Sorry, I should have pointed it out. The second bar went up because we expected that lift. Now there's a what-if capability, right? Let's assume that the temperature in week 51 is you know, below what we expected it to be. So that's going to 17, probably 15. So now we are calling the machine learning service. We are benefiting from 3.5 years worth of data, and you'll see when that comes back, the third column went down. Okay, so now the manager is able to say, yeah, the temperature is going to be you know, depressed. Can we run a promotion? And if you run a promotion, you know, what kind of unit case recall we're going to get? And I think that's going to move the second bar. But you get the point, right? There's a set of levers. It's kind of a what-if analysis, but it's not on the basis of kind of some rudimentary heuristics that someone constructed in an Excel. It's based on 3.5 years of data that has been instantiated in an OLS model that's running in AML, that's connected in Excel, and it's now giving that end of line, you know, that line of business end user the ability to benefit from years worth of SAP transactional data. I think that's the power of it. And when they see this, it's simple as well as sophisticated. It's simple but not simplistic. That's the key. And if you can land that, then you know, you have a chance of good customer success. Thanks, I'm about to lose my voice, so do you want to do one more?
Yeah, so hands in the room. Who wants to see another demo and who wants to ask questions?
No, demo.
Demo? All right. All right, we'll do another one. Let's see here. So this is a demo that what this walks through is the basic customer analysis project that we did for a bank. So here we've got all of the bank's customers. We've got some images here. These aren't actual customer images, just so you know. And what we're doing here is taking a look at the typical transaction data that that bank has on the customer. We can see Pam here. She has average account balances. She has a certain number of purchases in various different categories. She has a very strong average account summary. She typically deposits quite a bit of money every month. And she's a light credit user. As you can see, she's got quite a few purchases. Most of them are in the recreation area. So we have very good profile data for our customers. And we can take this data and use it in Azure Machine Learning to make predictions as to what those customers would want so far as engaging them. So I'll take a look. Here's Pam. And what this is doing is it's taking all of the profile data that we've got, and it's taking that and running it through a machine learning matrix. I think it's some sort of vector machine that it's running it through on the back end. I'm not a data scientist, so I'm not the best person to answer that question. But what it's doing is it's saying, okay, Pam, here's her statistics. She has a home and auto and recreational profile history. Based on what she's purchasing, the offer that this bank would be likely to give her that would result in the best likelihood of acceptance would be a personalized line of credit. So the targeted offer we'll make to her is a personalized line of credit the next time she's in the store, in the banking location, engaging in a transaction. So that's one of the many different industry scenarios that Dylan walked through earlier. We've got, let's see here, what other ones? We've got another one. This one is personalization, similar idea, but in a retail scenario, we've got a house and home company. They've got a host of data that they've got from their loyalty program as well as their transaction platform. So they're integrating their historical purchase data with their transaction purchase data, and then they're augmenting that data with a third-party data service in order to glean the customer's life stage to better understand where they need to engage the customer. So they've got a profile here with the customer purchase history, and then they've got a profile here with age as a variable to determine life stage, along with their rewards points and their total number of previous purchases. So we've got a bunch of different customers here. We can select a new customer, and what that'll do is it'll say, okay, for the outputs, we've got an offer that we're going to give them, and then an offer we're going to give them through a coupon. So in the line, we'll make an offer to them around a rewards points credit card, because that's what they'd be most interested in based on all the offers that we could make for them. And then we'll include a free designer consultation coupon to get them back into the store and re-engage with them in the future. So this is another example of personalization that we've implemented within our customer base. I have a couple of other demos.
A question there.
Yeah.
What do you ask?
So just to not to cut this off, to go back to the ARCA, what was the original sort of business problem you're trying to solve? Is it they hit wild forecasts and they weren't able to sort of have come up an accurate forecast, and that's what you did for them?
Great question. So when we first intercepted the ask, it was defined as forecasting. We have a forecasting problem, and we want to have better forecasts. But it turned out not to be true. We actually went in, and you know, they had SAP implemented, and SAP has a advanced APS, advanced planning services, and that actually has an ensemble of 8 modeling techniques that they were in the process of rolling out. So, you know, kind of the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. So we were pretty, you know, but those were black box. You put data into SAP, you do a kind of a planning run. At the end of the day, it says, you know, this kind of SKU in this location and this kind of routes get stacked. So we diverted the problem into more of what we call it became the why project, and why do we sell? And then from that, we backed into kind of assortment and long tail SKU optimization and a bunch of different things.
Because it was so why, or
Yes, yes. I would say the machine learning at that point, you know, I think I put that up there, right? The translucent box, you know, interpretable versus expressive. And we did, you know, I find that is, that's very pragmatic, right? When you're going in there, there's a bunch of people that are still trying to wrap their heads around what this thing is. You know, we want to address their need. So we made it up front very clear that these models are not as accurate, but they're going to be accessible. So let's begin with that. Once we have that, now we're in the process of wrapping in additional ML techniques and building ensembles.
I think that's a thing that I run into a lot is people think it's voodoo or black. You know, they don't trust it. You're going to tell the CEO how to change his business. You can't tell them why. You know, they jump in all 30.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. That's what we run into all the time. So it's a very pragmatic first step.
Are there other questions? Do we have any other questions going once? Twice.
He'll do another demo.
All right.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah, so from a sales cycle perspective, you showed kind of the spectrum of, you showed the spectrum of the customers or the customer profiles, right? Like, I mean, mm-hmm. healthcare and other stuff. Mm-hmm. But in the context of the, when you're talking about like Cortana Analytics or ML, like, I mean, when you're looking at it from a GTM side, I mean, how is the sales cycle like in progressing? Is it more organic business or is it more of a Microsoft supported business? I mean, like, you know, how does that translate when it comes to the, you know, opportunities out in the market essentially?
It's a mix of both. So we have been, close to Microsoft for the last few years in this build out. So we've been, benefited and grateful for the opportunities we go to market with them. But of late, you know, we've been able to focus on a few solutions that are more broadly applicable. And so we're beginning to do pivots where we take this and then, you know, we did this for soda and we're talking to beer companies with, you know, there's a bunch of different things. So it's about landing that and then pivoting for organic.
Any other questions? Well, I'm a shameless salesperson, so Dylan's going to be gone tomorrow for a wedding, unfortunately. But I'm going to be here. If you want to figure out how we can subcontract under you, if you're a partner, let me know. If you're a customer, let me know. I want to work with you. And if you're with Microsoft, I'd love to partner with you and engage to drive some Azure consumption. So thanks for coming, guys. And feel free to stick around if you have any more questions or if you want access to the demos.
Thank you.